This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Really cool. It's May 15th, 2019. Wow, it's halfway through May already. I can't believe that. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
Hi.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening live, you can call us at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. Ron's rant of the week. Okay, we got to have a rant. You ready for the rant? Do you as a cyclist use turn signals when you ride? Cyclists don't communicate well with vehicles on the road. This is a big one. You're expecting to have respect from the motorized vehicle world that's out there, and you don't tell them what you're doing. So I would like to just emphasize that this is a very important thing, and it's all going to segue into other things we're going to be talking about today. This is going to be a really cool show, very important show today. Drivers of motorized vehicles, use your turn signal. Please, please, please get used to using your turn signal. This is going to be so incredibly important in the future of cyclists living or dying that it's something we're going to touch on later in the show. So it's all about turn signals today on my rant. That's my rant for the day. Further discussion on the show and on my Facebook page, Bicycle Talk. Please let us know how you feel about this. On a positive side, tonight, 7 p.m. worldwide, it's the Ride of Silence. So the Ride of Silence is an event that is set up, was set up a number of years ago. It's rideofsilence.org. If you want to look it up online, you will find, when you go there, you will find events that may be happening in your state. You can click on it and you will see where the events are actually happening. Here in Connecticut, we have a Ride of Silence in Danbury this evening and also another Ride of Silence in Danielson. And once again, you can click on rideofsilence.org and find the locations of where they're going to ride out of. It is a ride where no one talks. There's a little speech beforehand. You go out on a very slow ride, and this is in remembrance of people who did not make it through an automobile and bicycle accident. So that's what this is all about. It's an awareness move, and it is at 7 o'clock tonight worldwide. Bike to Work Week, Bike to Work Day on a positive side. Yay! This is it. This is the week. You're supposed to be riding your bikes to work. Are you riding your bikes to work? And if you want to know more about that, there's a Bike to Work Day, which would be on Friday. If you want to know more about the locations here in Connecticut on that, go to bikewalkct.org, and you will find under their events pull down, you will find the locations that things are happening for Bike to Work Day. So hope to see some of you there. That'd be cool. I'm hoping to find my way into Hartford, but we'll see. Okay, the maintenance minute. Okay, we're just trying to keep this all in line. It's going to be a tutorial about from the rant, how to signal on your bike. Everybody knows how to signal on a bike, right? Not usually. Okay, so I'm going to point it out. If you want to be really noticed when you're riding your bike and you're making a left-hand turn signal, you can stick your hand all the way out to the left and point to where you're going. I'm a big believer in pointing to where I'm going. I also sometimes will look at the driver, point at the driver, and then point in the direction I'm going just so that they recognize me. You really need to learn to communicate. You can make your turn that way. You can also, back in the days of automobiles when there were no turn signals, you would roll down your driver's side window and you would elbow up your hand like you were waving, and that would indicate that you were making a right-hand turn. Personally, every time I've done this on my bicycle, people wave back, and they don't really understand that I'm signaling a right-hand turn. So my preference is to reach out all the way to the right-hand side. Once again, point to where I'm going. Always point to where you're going. I even point straight ahead if I'm going through an intersection and let people know I'm going that way. And at all times, making eye contact with the driver of the automobile. When you're going to stop, especially if you're in traffic or even on a group ride, dropping your left hand to the side and putting the palm back like you're signaling people to stop is a great idea. I also use another method. As I'm coming to a stop, I will bring my left hand off my handlebar and I will pat down on the air, like to mention that I'm slowing down. That's my slow down, and then my stop is to just drop my arm all the way down with the palm facing back. All right, that's it. That's my maintenance minute, which was a little more than a minute, usually is. Content, you know, it's, we've already talked about Bicycle Month, Bike to Work Week and Day. A couple things that are happening in the news, in the bicycle racing scene. The Amgen Tour of California is happening right now at this moment, and you can check that out. And the other thing that's happening right now, which is I am totally passionate about, but we don't have time for it today, unfortunately, is the Giro d'Italia. Yeah, there was a race yesterday. There was a huge crash in the race. Unfortunately, it was 6 kilometers to go. A real bummer. A lot of key riders went down. It has opened up the field to a little bit different finish, possibly. We'll see what happens in the future. Keep your eyes on the Giro. Exciting things are happening, and it'll get better as they get deep into the mountains. So, as promised, last week I said something about we were going to do a show on autonomous vehicles. And this was brought to me by one of our favorite listeners out there. And he has proposed this idea, and we drove it forward. That's an interesting play on words. and we are going to talk about this today. My special guest today is Michael P. Ahern-Kearns, a.k.a. Mike from Eastford, who you have heard if you've listened to my podcast in the past. You've heard Mike call in and comment. And Mike, it's great to have you here. What a wonderful thing.
Glad to be here.
Yeah.
Thanks for letting me be here.
Oh, anytime, and more in the future. We have plans.
This is a big topic.
Okay. But before we get to the big topic, we're going to ask about the topic that every new guest that comes on my show has to answer, and that is, can you tell me your first memory of riding your bicycle?
Absolutely.
All right. Absolutely. Let's hear it.
Can I mention, too?
Oh, yes, of course.
My first bike that I had that I have such wonderful memories about was my blue Columbia Thunderbolt with a tank horn.
And
I got that when I was living in the city of Hartford. I'm born and raised in the north end of Hartford. And I got that bike, and now suddenly I could join all my friends who had bikes, and we'd bop up to Keeney Park and go all over the place on these bikes, driving on the streets. It was fantastic. Just loved it. The second bike that's important in my life was the bike that made me an avid cyclist, and that was my Raleigh Lenton Sports 10-speed English Racer.
Lenton Sports?
Yes.
I don't know if I know the Lenton Sports.
This was back in around 1962.
Okay.
And basically, I think they took the 3-speed frame and just built around it. This was beautiful. It was metal flake gold, like a deep bronze gold. Had 10 gears. And we had moved out to Windsor, Connecticut. All of a sudden, I could ride everywhere and great distances. I could ride to school, which was kind of a nerdy thing to do at the time.
People didn't do that. I did the same thing.
But getting on this 10-speed bike, and I could ride back to Hartford to see my friends, it was such an eye-opener. From that point on, avid cyclist the rest of my life.
That's it. Once it gets in your blood, it's really, really hard to get it out.
Absolutely.
It really is.
Absolutely.
It really is. Awesome. Well, those are great stories. I love it. That's beautiful. So let's get out of the serious stuff. We got some serious stuff we're going to talk about here, okay? This autonomous vehicle thing is just, it's a little on the frightening side. Mike and I have talked about this in the past, and we talk about how we're really worried that the technology is going faster than than it should, and than the research is, I guess is probably the best way to put that. So We have a lot to talk about here today. We're going to go through some checkpoints here, and I think this is going to turn into an expansion for some future episodes because there's an awful lot of information here. We have a, you had an experience last weekend, did you not, on your bicycle?
Yes, I did.
Could you just relay that experience? Because this is really where we're going with this.
It relates directly to our topic today. It has to do with the lane keeping systems, which are now evolving into most cars. A lot of the higher priced cars have them, and even your average car is now getting what's called a lane keeping system. Right. And that's a system which auto corrects the car. If it recognizes the lane stripes on this in the center and on the side of the road, and if you suddenly start to drift over one of those lanes, the car will do a variety of things. It will auto-correct the steering. It will change braking. It will change power to the wheels. They're very sophisticated systems. And what it'll do, if I could just a moment. Thank you. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Didn't expect that interruption. It'll bring the car back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the surface, you say, wow, that's a great thing. You know, if all of a sudden I'm like dozing a little bit and the car drifts, it'll
bring sure.
it back.
I can see use for it.
Oh,
I can
yeah.
certainly see it.
Yep. However, it has some unintended consequences, which is really the topic that we're looking at here. What is the unintended consequence of all of these different technologies that have come into our automobiles? And this one in particular almost bit me bad this past Saturday. One of the issues with lane keeping systems is that it doesn't recognize that you, the soft, squishy thing, to use your terminology,
right.
is on the side of the road. It doesn't know that you're there.
No.
The car will bring itself back.
Right.
Now, the problem you run into is I like many people these days, for safety reasons, I use a side view mirror. I have a rear view mirror on my bike.
Yeah, I just started riding with one last year.
Oh, it'll save your life. Hopefully.
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 Well, at least you'll see your life coming to an end quicker.
Maybe
be able to, you know, adjust for that.
Hopefully right. adjust for that.
Right.
So I'm riding down Route 195 in an area not too far from Fran's office.
Right by Fran's office. Yeah.
That's right. There's no shoulder. It's maybe 6 inches.
At best.
And I look in my rear view mirror, and I see a car, a brand new luxury vehicle with these technologies, moving over to go by me. So I see this in my rearview mirror, and I think, wow, that's great. Next thing I know, this car is literally within a few inches of me.
Right.
I can feel the air of the side view mirror as it brushes by me.
Okay.
Now, my first reaction was just, I'll be frank, total anger.
Sure. I would be the same way.
My feeling was, this was intentional, so I flew up. And I must admit, I used some unkind words towards the driver who looked at me like, what are you talking about?
What did I do?
You know, what did I do?
Right.
So, and my wife rightly so said, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be screaming at the driver. You don't know what's going on. Maybe they were distracted by their phone. Another reason for me to get angry.
Yes.
And it probably wasn't intentional. Well, I started reflecting on this and reflecting on our topic and realized it was intentional, but it wasn't the driver's intention.
Right.
It was the car's intention.
It was the autocorrect on the
That's
car.
Right.
And back to the signal that I started with the turn signals.
Mm-hmm.
How many people, let's ask a silly question. When you're driving your motorized vehicle, how often do you see people using their turn signals in their cars? Percentage-wise, just a rough
Never.
Guess. Never. That would be 0%.
The percentage is so small, it just proves the rule that nobody's using them.
Right, right. right. So folks, here's the deal. These systems can be bypassed. And they can be bypassed by your signal. If you're signaling that you're going to the left because you're coming around a cyclist who's on the right-hand side of the road, the car will not autocorrect. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay.
In this particular technology
right.
that I know of,
that's
in this
the way
particular
it works
car, that it works that way.
Right. You turn on the turn signal, and it'll release the autocorrect and allow you to change lanes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's all about. But if 0% in your world, I'm going to say 80% in my world, don't use their turn signals, then what we're doing is we're setting ourselves up for a major disaster here. You have to learn how to turn it off. You have to be able to disable the system in certain circumstances. Big one, soft, squishy things. So,
absolutely.
Anyway, so that driver wasn't doing anything wrong because the driver came up behind you and faded out to get around you, being courteous, doing the right thing, but the car changed the whole scenario because the car said, no, you can't do this, because they didn't have the turn signal on. So actually, it was the driver's fault.
It was. Think about the cognitive dissonance, though, that's going on at that moment. Because you have a driver who's looking at the cyclist, the soft, squishy thing.
Sure.
They want to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
But then they have to backtrack. What do I have to do to get my auto correct? And this is happening in nanoseconds. Now, in that particular part of the road, the speeds are not that high at that point, maybe 40 miles an hour. But that's enough to squish the squishy thing.
Oh, yeah.
To say the least.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, there's a whole variety of thought processes that the driver has to go through that they don't have time to go through.
Right.
And I can think of a number of situations where all of a sudden the driver has to make a snap decision. This decision had forethought.
Right.
But the car took a different direction.
Right.
Now, if we think about two cars coming at each other, we're on the right side of the road. It's a blind corner going over a blind rise. All of a sudden, the driver has to make the snap decision. I've got to thread the needle or right. slow down. They have all these thoughts going through their mind. Last thing they're going to do is hit the turn signal. They're going to go into a basic panic mode.
Right.
Unfortunately, the car does not recognize that we are there.
That's correct.
My feeling, my personal opinion, and based on the statistics I've been reading about the rise in accidents because of lane keeping systems specifically, we are going to be the victims.
Right.
And what do we do about that? How do we get around that?
You know, you made a quote. I don't know if I put it down here or not. You quoted someone earlier, and I think I put it down here. It was George W. Bush made a quote about.
That was George H.W. Bush.
H.W. Bush. Yes. H.W. Bush.
41. Bush 41.
Right. Bush 41. And what was that quote? You remember that? It was something about.
It takes tragedy to affect change.
Yes. Yes. Which is. We'd really like to avoid this. This is why we're having this discussion. I want to open this up. I want people to understand that this is serious business. If you're an engineer, I know how you think, and this is a good topic for you to join in with us, 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is like, we need to open this discussion. It's got to go way beyond where we are right now, but we're trying to set the stage here to get people to understand that, you know, the more your vehicle is telling you that it will drive itself, the more you need to learn how to drive that vehicle. And this is important because you still have to make decisions with that vehicle that will override the artificial intelligence, which is driving your car.
The issue we have with that is that these systems are coming on fast and furiously.
They are.
Faster than people can cope with them.
And they are driven by?
They are driven by the insurance companies.
Yes, they are.
And the insurance companies know the statistics behind all of this. Mm-hmm. The hope on the insurance company part is that we finally get to level 5 autonomous vehicles where we're just bods in pods.
Right.
You know, and that way, but even then, how sophisticated does it have to be in these various scenarios? Can it think as fast as a human being can?
Right.
Can it recognize all these variables and have a human emotional reaction to, do I kill the cyclist? Do I have the head-on collision? Do I hit the brakes and have somebody hit me from behind? These are decisions which have to be made at a human level.
Right. Right. And then there was that study that showed that I think it was a Tesla that they used, and the Tesla was going down the road and a bus or something had pulled out in front of the Tesla, and the Tesla immediately did a change of course to save the driver, the human that was inside mm-hmm. the car, to save the human inside mm-hmm. the car. The car veered off to the left and went through a cafe, an outdoor cafe of people. That were out there were 12 people out there, and this was simulated, okay. But there's a problem. So now, how do you define this? How do you define whether or not, you know, who's expendable and who's not?
We have the trolley problem in real life. You know the trolley problem?
What's the trolley problem?
That's a classic. That's a classic philosophy problem. If you take philosophy class, you're going to be presented with the trolley problem.
Okay.
They explored the trolley problem on that show. You know.
No.
The show, the one with the with Kristen Bell, and you know the where everybody's dead.
Oh, okay.
You know that.
Yeah.
That show that we love to watch. Oh.
Does this involve zombies?
No, not at all.
No. I'm trying to think of what you're talking. I know what you mean, but I can't pull
it's
up.
The
right
show.
Now.
It's that show with Kristen Bell. Anyway, all right. So the show is The Good Place.
Oh, right.
They
the
explored
place.
The trolley problem
Great
on
show,
The Good Place.
The Great
yes,
show.
Because it's all about philosophy, mm-hmm. and they have a philosopher on it. Anyway, the trolley problem is a thought experiment in ethics. You see a runaway trolley moving toward five tied up or otherwise incapacitated people lying on the tracks. You're standing next to a lever that controls a switch. If you pull the lever, the trolley will be redirected onto a sidetrack, and the five people on the main track will be saved. However, there is a single person lying on the sidetrack. You have two options. One, do nothing and allow the trolley to kill the five people on the main track, or pull the lever, diverting the trolley onto the sidetrack, where it will kill one person. Which is the more ethical option? We're putting the trolley problem into real life, and
right.
we're letting a machine make the decision. I almost died a couple of weeks ago. I was coming out in my beautiful Kia car. I have a Kia Niro, and I was driving up South Eagleville Road, and I was approaching Separatist. Mm-hmm. And people inch out at Separatist. Well, some large behemoth decided to come out on Separatist, and I don't know if they weren't looking or what they were doing. I was driving straight. I clearly had the right of way because I was driving straight. I wasn't signaling. Person just pulled out. And
with
I
no
had,
regard whatsoever.
Right. They just pulled out. I don't know if they were sick of waiting because it was a busy time of day. And I had to make 5,000 snap decisions. I had to pull around them and drive around. And when I pulled around the other way, there was somebody else coming in the opposite lane. And I had to thread the needle, like you said. And I wound up on Separatist Road, unharmed. But
not,
I
not
had
where to, you were attending, intending on
not
going.
At all.
Right.
Not at all. No, I had to thread the needle about three times in order to make it onto Separatist Road. And I pulled over. But I couldn't stay pulled over because there was a line of cars behind me. So I'm like, I was thinking maybe the idiot who had pulled out would come and see if I was all right. But they were gone, and there were all these people waiting to get to wherever, you know, their beer and potato chips behind me. And I had to keep going, and I had to keep going in Separatist, and I didn't even intend to go that way. It was incredible.
Now imagine
if
in
you,
that situation.
If you had lane correcting.
If you had to fight a plethora of evasion technologies in your car.
Right.
Which might make different decisions than you.
Right.
We're talking about one system.
And
right.
I wasn't
going
to reach right. for my, I wasn't about to reach for my turn signal
yeah,
in that
right.
situation.
Exactly. Right. It's kind of the last thing you would think of.
No, you're
you
going to
really
do
is
your invasive driving.
Right.
That's
right.
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 I was very proud of myself because of my handling. I had two feelings. Oh my God, I almost died. Thank you, angels, for watching out for me. And my second feeling was, hey, I'm a pretty good car handler.
Pretty good driver, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a point there that, you know, if you've driven for a long time, you become a better driver, hopefully, is what you do. But, and you learn how to make these decisions. And then, you know,
we have
now
a lot
the car
of people,
is going to take
now
over
the
our decisions.
Decisions are taking, be, right. being taken away from you.
So the transition to automated vehicles, AVs, and where are we at right now?
Well, right now we're at what's called level 2, 3, and 4,
mm-hmm.
and in the levels have been standardized mm-hmm. for autonomous vehicle technology. Level 0, it actually starts at 0. There are 6 levels. Level 0 is no automation at all.
Right.
It's just your car, which allows you to make a decision.
Right.
Hopefully. Level 2 is basic driver assistance, such as automatic braking systems, ABS, mm-hmm. cruise
which,
control.
Which a lot
like
of cars
that.
Have now.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. One of the issues with ABS, with unintended consequences, is people know they have this braking system.
And they take more risks.
They take more risks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So there's risk compensation going on all across the board because of these technologies. Level 2 is partial automation. Okay, that's now your cruise control can recognize the car in front of you and slow down. It can read what's going on in front of you. One of the problems with that, it does not recognize stationary objects. It only can read distance correlations.
Right.
One of the things that it does is it'll brake for fog.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
All of a sudden you see fog coming and your car will start slowing down because it can be. It has not fully developed. A lot of these systems are not
so
fully
So it
developed.
Sees it as a wall.
Yes.
No
yes.
kidding.
Yes, it uses radar. It starts bouncing off. It gets confused. Level 3 is what's called conditional automation, where you have these automations. For example, with cruise control, if you hit your brake, it'll turn off.
That's right, which is good.
With the lane keeping system, if you hit your turn signal, it will turn off.
Right.
If you have time to think about that.
If you have time to think about it.
Level 4 is high automation, which is where Tesla is right now.
Mm-hmm.
Tesla has systems called autopilot.
Yes, they do.
Yes, and recently, I don't want to get into all the details, but I shared with you a situation where a couple was arrested for being distracted while the car was on autopilot.
They were doing things that you're supposed to do in the bedroom
That's
in their
right.
car. That's basically what they were doing.
And they got
and yikes.
And they got a major ticket. Fortunately, no, the car didn't hit anything.
Yeah.
But they did get arrested.
There was probably some indecent exposure there.
It was illicit use of autopilot. So. I think of the movie Airplane, you know.
It's humorous and yet at the same time frightening.
But why know, exactly? Why exactly were they arrested? What was the crime that they committed, or what was the infraction they committed?
Not paying attention to driving their car,
probably.
But if it was on autopilot, do you have to pay attention to driving
your
car?
Well, there's
a
good question. A legal question.
I believe the car had started entering into a reckless situation.
Oh, okay.
While they were doing this,
but it's on autopilot. Shouldn't it fix it?
But
don't we wish?
And here's the thing: a reckless situation by a law officer could be that they see this car up ahead and it's bouncing from lane to lane, from the edge of the lane to the edge of the lane, because it's on autocorrect, and that would normally pull over someone because they would think they were either
intoxicated or texting.
Right.
Reckless
right?
driving has a whole variety of parameters.
Yeah.
Okay. Distracted driving, such as using your cell phone in a car, that's a form of reckless driving in this case.
Right. Right.
Illicit use of autopilot.
That's funny.
And, you know, I had a client that I was calling on in my work world, and they have two Teslas. And they were, of course, getting solar to charge their Teslas. And so they were talking. I said, so what do you think of that? And he said, oh, my God. He said, I'm on the highway every day. And he said, it's great. He said, I just get up on the highway and I let the car do its thing. And I'm on autopilot and I've got navigation and it just puts me where I got to be and I don't have to think about it.
That's terrifying.
I love that thing. I can keep texting.
And that's the thing that drives me nuts is that it allows you to continue the distraction. Mm-hmm. And if you sit down in the driver's seat, I had the opportunity of sitting in a driver's seat of a Tesla last weekend. And the gentleman that owned the car, he said, you have to understand, he said, this is not a car. It's a computer with wheels and an engine.
Yeah.
Some manufacturers have taken that to task, specifically the car that I drive, BMW, mm-hmm. in their new automated systems. To have all these things working, your hands must be on the wheel.
Oh, good.
Oh,
so if your hands are off the wheel and the car thinks you're texting, everything off and you have to drive the car.
Oh,
very interesting.
Now, you see, BMW is way smarter than everybody else is because the other thing that BMW does and Mercedes is they have that projection system that projects the information out in front of you on the windshield of the car. Mm-hmm. And you said there was a new technology beyond that.
Well, with the BMW system, it actually is a hologram which appears outside of the windshield. And the whole idea is to reduce the time that your focal length has to change.
Yes.
So that you're more efficient with your ability to look at the information and see what's in front of you.
Sure, sure.
Yeah,
so you're looking to put it in cycling terms, you're riding down the road in a very tight line and you're looking at the person's shoulder and hips, not the rear wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because then you can see through. So mm-hmm. you can see what they see.
Yeah.
Same
idea.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
There you go.
Right. My mom rode in a BMW that had the projection. I'm not sure if it was I don't know if it was the hologram, but it was on the windshield.
It's the head-up display. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of them are right at you. You can see them on the glass, but some of them are actually projected. They have this projection system, which so it appears outside of the car.
Right.
Wow.
Cool. It's Princess Leia on the projection from R2-D2 when they sent the message out for if you're Star Wars. Person.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Help me. There you go.
The amount of information these systems are creating, though, that people have to look at is just phenomenal. For example, if we're looking just, speaking of a BMW, if we're just looking at the center display, the what used to be the speedometer area, it's now the center display, not to be confused with your touch screen display or your head-up display or your phone, which is in your hand. The center display can be customized with four layouts of multiple pages to reflect driving, entertainment, navigation, connectivity, vehicle information. Viewing and manipulating the information may be performed by using your touch screen, your iDrive controller, voice control, or gesture control. Did you see anywhere in that somebody's driving their car?
No.
No.
No,
not at
all.
They're playing with their toys.
They're using all this electronic gadgetry in their car, which, you know, I mean, I've been ranting about this one for years because, you know, the automobile industry, I don't know what they were thinking, and I don't understand why no one has sued them yet, because they in order to make it safer for people to use their communication in their car, i.e. the cell phone, they put a giant cell phone screen out of the line of sight of driving the vehicle. And they all have them. Mm-hmm. And I a number of weeks ago, I ranted on Dodge because their new pickup truck has a 13-inch screen. So they put a TV set inside of their cars.
This one has a 17-inch screen.
17 inches. Oh, my God.
I think that's the size of one in our kitchen.
And this is, yeah, right, exactly. I was going to say my computer monitor at home is probably about that size. What are we thinking here?
Well, it leads me to getting to another aspect of the technology, which is the demise of the button in cars.
Right.
All right. And true ergonomic functioning of controls in automobiles, which had come to a pretty high level of development and evolution over time. So you knew through muscle memory exactly where your radio button was, where the heater was, where the button was for the AC.
Right.
Now, it's all on, for many cars, not all, but for many cars, you have to look at your touch screen and touch something.
That's right.
Which means you don't see the soft, squishy thing on the side of the road when you come around the blind corner.
And it only takes a glance away from the windshield to make a critical mistake.
Yes. And that takes longer than you think.
Oh, yeah.
To look at the screen, make a decision, touch it, decide whether your decision was correct. There's a whole bunch of processes that are occurring there.
Right.
So it's just...
Ooh, wow.
Now, some systems have evolved. Are you familiar with rotary dial haptic response controllers?
Is that where the transmission, the dial transmissions?
It gives you little haptic responses in your hand.
All right.
It learns what you like in terms of, well, he wants heat right now. So when the dial is turned to the right place, it will give a certain pulsing sensation into your hand.
Oh, no, I'm not familiar with this at all. That's wild. Yeah,
it's called the iDrive controller. The problem with that iDrive controller is, nice to have haptic responses, but it controls almost 700 functions in the car.
Oh.
So, now it drills down. It has
priorities.
Houston,
we have a problem.
Yes, Houston, we have a problem. Now, it prioritizes through your use of it what you're doing. Most of the time we're going for heat or stuff like that, but still.
Right.
The amount of functions that are in these cars is just constant distraction.
Well, how long did it take before Boeing actually admitted that they had a problem with their computerized systems?
It took tragedy to effect change.
Right, exactly. Went back to Bush.
Yeah.
Right.
And by the way, that quote had to do with airplanes.
Yeah.
At that time, it had to do with terrorism and how do we counteract terrorists being on planes and doing things such as what happened on 9/11.
Sure.
And
sure.
It was way before 9/11.
Yeah, it was. You're right. Yeah. Ooh, wow. Well, we have touched on something. We got to keep moving here because there's just so much information here. So, I think that we have to start looking at, who is responsible for this. And I think it's us. I think it really comes down to the fact that we, as humans that are driving motorized vehicles, really don't want to drive it anymore. We are more interested in playing with our toys than we are with driving the car.
I have a great solution for this.
Yeah.
Public transportation.
Absolutely. There you go.
Unfortunately, the statistics show that is not the preference in the United States for people.
Well, it's nope. not the preference, but
we want to be the bod in the pod.
Oh, I know we do.
It requires external forces to change the culture.
Yes, it does.
Our culture is not like the Netherlands. Our culture is not like France.
Right.
It's not like Germany, where mass transit is a way of life.
And it's perfected to the
we
point
don't have
where
good
you wouldn't
mass
choose.
Transit, though. Well, you would have to try change the infrastructure to
again,
get the goodness.
And that's the whole point. We would have to perfect it. We'd have to really perfect the whole idea of mass transportation to eliminate the individual vehicle. But the individual vehicle is so strongly driven by two major industries that, you know, well, actually, I can say three. I mean, the insurance industry is just as much to blame as anybody else is. Anybody who's making money, the banking industry, anyone who's making money off the sale of cars and trucks is to blame here.
Well, it takes leadership at the highest levels. We just had our leadership put together a proposal for a $2 trillion infrastructure bill. Was there anything in there for evolving our mass transit system?
No.
Was there anything in there for alternative transportation, alternative vehicle technology? No.
No.
Was there anything in there about bicycles, God forbid? No.
No.
What was it about? Making it better for more cars.
Right. And we don't need more cars.
We do need infrastructure improvements. Our bridges are falling down. And
yep.
You were old enough to remember the Mianus Bridge
situation. Oh, yeah. Okay? Sure did.
So
yeah,
we don't need
yeah.
that. So yep. I'm all in favor of improving that existing infrastructure. But to just make it so there's more cars, all we're going to have is a bigger traffic jam.
Right. Right. And I think that 95, I read one at one time that I-95 in Connecticut was built to capacity in like 1962 or something crazy. Ridiculous. It's like 1962, you got to be kidding me. So it had already hit capacity at that point. And now you know what it is. I mean, the trying to get out of Connecticut and into Connecticut from the New York-New Jersey corridor, all of that between New York, New Jersey, and Northern New Jersey and Connecticut, it's a nightmare. It's just so jammed up, and it's because, and you know, we go down to New Jersey to visit with Fran's sister, and I hate that drive. I just hate it because it's just ridiculous amounts of traffic.
What you do is you listen to 1010 Winds. You
listen to the radio and figure out which one is the worst.
And also
not
Google
which one is best, which one is worst.
Google Maps and Waze give you a pretty good idea of which you want to. But I still like to listen to 1010 Winds when I get close.
There's a problem with apps like Waze and Google Maps, too, is sometimes they're reading what is the information that's coming through their mapping system. But oftentimes it's also because people are reporting. If they're reporting, then they're not looking at where they're going. They're touching their cell phone.
That's
so
right.
We're
or
back to the same
screen.
Old problem or their touch screen. Exactly. So because they're, I mean, I see it all the time. I see alert. I use Waze and I see the alerts pop up and it'll say something about, you know, car pulled over ahead or just disabled vehicle ahead. And, you know, your immediate reaction is to reach over and touch that. Yes, you saw that. Or maybe it's law enforcement on the side of the road and you do that. But what is that doing? It's taking me off the road. It's
well, maybe
taking
it's
my
better
eyes
to
off.
Listen to 1010 Winds.
Or, you know, let other
your
people
traffic,
report
traffic
it.
Traffic on the
hope
ones.
I'm not caught in the middle of it.
I think people
I
should opt out of these technologies. You can.
There you go.
You can actually have the cars built. My car has none of these technologies.
Yeah.
You know, it's got ABS. It's got a cruise
sure.
control. But
yeah.
You had a choice. You could buy it down as the stripped down hot rod that mine is,
right?
Or you could add a doodad in the world,
right? And your phone, less the rotary dial, is very much of
well, you've seen
old
my
technology,
phone.
Right? Right. It's beam me up, Scotty.
That's
phone.
That's right. It's beam me aboard, Scotty. Yep.
So and you know, so that's another thing. And we don't have to have smartphones, which I call them dumb phones because they don't make me smarter.
Well, unfortunately, this technology is taking over, and
we can't escape it.
We, as cyclists, we have to take care of ourselves.
Right.
You've made some comments about and rightly so, about getting people butts on bikes.
Right.
More butts on bikes. Okay.
Right.
If I was new to cycling, I wouldn't want to get on the road these days.
Yeah, well, it's frightening, and I hear that comment a lot.
Yeah.
And but, you know, the answer is, and people say, you know, I just don't want to get on my bike because, you know, it's dangerous out there and there's no way I can do it. And it's like, the answer is not that attitude. The answer is that is to actually get out on your bike. The more bikes there are on the road, the safer the roads become.
Well, what happens when some of us become martyrs? And I mean this very seriously. The situation we had on Saturday really was quite enlightening, to say
yeah.
And on our way back, when we were riding back, we were riding on Route 89 during basically the dinner hour.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of cars on this rural, narrow little road mm-hmm. was enormous.
Yeah.
When we got home, my wife, Madeline, said to me, and rightly so, I agree with her, I'm never riding on that road again.
Yeah.
Now, there are certain times of the day when you can ride on that road.
Right, and 89 was classically known as a great, safe road to ride on. I mean, it's a state road, but it was quiet. It was always quiet.
But now, I had my mirror save my life last year at the Mount Hope crossing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm heading north on 89, crossed over through the intersection where the Mount Hope Bridge is. And as I'm going over that little crest, there's an RV coming up behind me, another car coming the other way. I look in my rearview mirror and realize the RV is about to crush me against the guardrail.
Ooh.
Bam, on the brakes. Thank God for Campagnolo brakes. Instant stopping power. If I had gone 3 feet further,
mm-hmm.
Well, I would not be here today.
Okay, so that poses a discussion, because the discussion is, by the League of American Bicyclists, by their standards of how to ride your bike in traffic and how to ride your bike, you shouldn't be in the position to get squished against the guardrail. You should be out in the road. But the thing that the motorized vehicles hate you to do is the safest thing for you to do.
This guy was on the phone. He never saw me.
Oh.
I saw him in my rearview mirror. Then I did the shoulder check. I looked up. He's on the phone.
It's too bad there wasn't some sort of a we could fight technology with technology. And when you see that happening, you could push a button that would just go screech into their ear.
I would like to see an automatic transponder.
Yeah.
For bicycles, you know, we all have a blinky. I would like to see somebody develop a transponder in that, and that cars have some sort of a common technology which would read and alert the... We have all these warnings, right?
Right, right.
Lane departure warning, this warning, that warning.
Yeah, tie it into the bike.
Right. So that it's on the bike and it signals to the car, bicycle there, and maybe can negate.
Ooh.
I mean, this is.
I like that.
This is level 4 technology.
Right.
Right. In terms of vehicle autonomy. But these systems currently do not share information with each other.
They do not.
And we need to get to the point where these systems start sharing, and we need something on our bicycle as an alert to the vehicle.
Right.
Especially
like a beacon that's always
texting,
pushing
their
out.
Phone, you know,
right.
The car's got to make the decision.
Right. Ooh. Wow. Well, this is enlightening, isn't it? Well, that's why we wanted to have this discussion, though, because this is really, I mean, we're not even hitting the tip of the iceberg. On
oh,
this
no.
Thing.
This,
they're just like.
I'm still on number one.
I know you are.
Point number one.
I know.
On 4 pages.
I know. But, you know, we'll do what we can. We can go for a few more minutes, and then I'm going to have to go to the calendar and wrap it up. But we'll definitely continue this discussion, because this is a very, very important discussion.
Well, if we could wrap it up with some questions as
sure.
an academic and a researcher.
Yeah.
Good research always
leads
to questions.
Okay.
You know, what do we do? What you said, we're not supposed to have a call to action. So
right.
I have to be careful here.
Yeah.
What do we do? How does this get changed? Now, I personally think we need very strong leadership at the top.
Right.
At the very top of our country.
Right.
We need to have a different mindset. This goes to the call to action thing.
Right.
We need to think, you know, I remember someone saying during a past election as an insult, what do you want to do? Be like Europe?
Well, okay.
A mad socialist. But then I look at some of the stuff I sent
but
you
look
about.
Look at some of the things they've
the
done over there. I mean, you know, they have motorized vehicle transit lane, and then they have a barrier between that and the bike lane, and then which I think is where they put their parking. I think that's how they do that.
Oh,
and
they're then, a variety. In the
and then they have the bicycle, and then they have the walking. And so they've got it all broken down, so the cyclists are pretty much surrounded by protection.
Yeah, the one I like, they have a whole variety of infrastructure styles. They have the two-car lanes like this. And I saw this in Boston, by the way, recently. Two-car lanes. You have the parking lane. You have a dedicated bicycle lane.
Right.
Then you have either bollards or a landscaping system.
Right,
and
exactly.
And then the walking lanes.
Right, right.
So you don't get doored.
Right, so you don't get doored. Right, because the pedestrian lane has to be between the parallel parking lane and the
actual. Yeah, you've got the cars,
exactly.
Park, bike, bollard, pedestrian. Like
right.
That. On each side.
Or just start eliminating the parallel parking and making people ride their bicycles. Because, you know, you can put 10 bicycles in one parallel
parking
spot.
Well, London is doing that. They now have some areas that they're developing called cycle superhighways.
Yeah.
Wow.
Through the city. Bicycles only. In Amsterdam,
they
have tunnels below ground, which are only for cyclists and walkers. There's
right.
There's a dedicated cycle lane. There's a dedicated walking lane. There are a number of tried and true and great future think possibilities out there for bicycle infrastructure.
Sure.
To save the soft, squishy things.
Right. Exactly.
In order to do that, though, we need a cultural shift in our country.
Yes.
Discussions like this, I think, go a long way.
Well, this is the beginning. That. You know, I mean, and I know there are others out there that have talked about this. I'm not the only one who's doing this. But, you know, we need to start a movement here because this is critical. I mean, if they eliminate enough of the soft, squishy things, they're not going to be able to sell cars anymore. So, you know, we got to look at that. And you know, and if enough of the soft, squishy things start having a problem and lawsuits start coming out, then things are going to have to change dramatically because we do know that money does change a lot of attitudes.
Absolutely. It's got to be monetized.
Right.
All right.
It does.
And you can. But you have to create new technologies and a new working relationship with people, thinking outside of the box. I saw a beautiful bike path in England, which is lit with LEDs underneath,
nice.
So
nice.
That you can ride it at night.
Yeah. Right.
In Netherlands, they have one called that's the Starry Night Path. That's the one that's lit. London, excuse me, has the other one called Star Path, where they have an aggregate built into the pavement of the bike lane, which absorbs ultraviolet light during the day and then glows all night.
Oh,
woo-hoo!
Brilliant, brilliant.
So there are so many things that are happening out there.
When are we going?
Where people are cyclists.
Right, no kidding.
In cycling cultures.
Right, because they think that way.
That's right.
And so you have, you said that, you know, we have to monetize it, but we also have to humanize it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a key point right here. We are human beings. We are people that ride on bicycles. We are people that drive in vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And until that connection comes together, we're in trouble.
All the jobs that were created to create that Starry Night Path.
Yeah.
With the LEDs.
Yeah,
all right?
Exactly.
The lighting technology, the pavement that went into it.
Incredible.
The electrical engineers. I mean, there's a whole variety of technologies which spell jobs.
And clean jobs.
Clean
also.
Jobs.
Clean jobs.
Green
absolutely.
Jobs.
And
green
jobs that create
well-paying
fitness.
Well-paying jobs.
Yes, absolutely. Because they're high-tech jobs.
That's
they really
right.
are. I mean, there's technology
and
involved
some of them
here.
Are low-tech. Some guys out there just spreading the aggregate.
Right, right.
Popping in the curbing.
Sure.
You know, it's a whole series of levels that are addressed by thinking this way.
I point to Germany. Germany started about 25, maybe almost 30 years ago doing this. And if you take a look at the strongest economy in Europe, where is it?
Germany.
It's in Germany. Gee, I wonder why.
I wonder why.
Yeah, exactly. They invested in infrastructure, you know, and you know, not to get too much on that soapbox where we run over our edge here. But if we were to do that in this country, we could rescue a lot of things in this country, too. And it has to start city by city. Take a look at Minneapolis, and they're on top of it. Portland, Oregon, they're on top of it. You know, a lot of the big cities are paying attention. You set up in Boston, you just saw some interesting things.
Yes.
Boston is totally on top of it. I know the people that are involved
up there.
There's
also, unfortunately, a lot of forces who are against this.
Oh, I understand.
In Boston. I listen to a lot of Boston radio, and there are people up there who hate cyclists. They do not want us on the road. But fortunately, there's a strong advocacy up there.
Real strong.
Promote this and to see it through and to make sure that it happens. It's the kind of thing we need everywhere in our country. Going back to what I said before, it's got to start at the top. We need strong leadership to be able to affect this change. Great change starts through tragedy. It also starts through a conversation.
Yes. Well, thank you for the conversation. My special guest today has been Michael P. Adam Kearns, a.k.a. Mike from Eastford, yay, who came on the show after I've been begging you for a while, haven't I, come on the show?
Yes.
All right. So, and look, this was great. It was very successful. We had a great conversation today. We will continue these conversations in the future because there's a lot more to talk about here. I'm going to have to bring it to a wrap here. We have a few things I'd like to discuss. Of course, the most important, right on the top of everything, this evening at 7 p.m., the Ride of Silence. Go to rideofsilence.org if you want to know more about that. Very important. Bike Walk Connecticut, bikewalkct.org for your Bike to Work Week and Bike to Work Day. There are a number of locations around the state of Connecticut that are having festivities around that, and there are a number of people that are riding into Hartford for a celebration there. So we want to keep an eye on that. As far as other things on my calendar, we have, let's see here, I have the CCAP Tuesday Night Crit Series is back, and it's happening in East Hartford at Rensselaer Field. You can find out more about that on Bike Reg if you want to learn a little bit more about racing your bike and learning how to really handle your bike like a pro. The Tour de Lyme in 2019, you'll find on Facebook. That is May 19th. So very, very close on that. June 9th, we have the Wethersfield Bicycle Show, Swap Meet and Festival. You can find out more about that on Facebook. Fran is doing an event this weekend, which she may want to announce.
Yes, it's Climb to the Clouds. It's it includes the 80 and the 100-mile distances, include a climb up Mount Wachusett. It's put on by the Charles River Wheelers, and it starts at the Lincoln Sudbury School in Sudbury, Mass. So you can look it up for more information. Climb to the Clouds and also the Charles River Wheelers website. You'll get more information.
Cool. All right. Ride Around the Quabbin, Saturday, June 15th, 2019. 65, 100, and 125-mile rides from Rutland, Massachusetts. Not much traffic, plenty of hills. It's not a race. Love that part. League Cycling Instructor Seminar. If you want to learn how to become a certified cycling instructor, the Center for Latino Progress in Hartford, July 19th, 2019 through July 21st, 2019. And you can learn how to become a national bicycle instructor. The George Street Bike Challenge for Major Taylor, Worcester Hill Climb on July 28th in Worcester, Massachusetts. It's the George Street Hill Climb. It's not even a quarter mile. It's very sharp, very steep, but it's where Major Taylor proved himself back in the 1890s. We are also, Fran and I, are going to be participating in not one, not two, but eight Farm to Fork Fondos this year. I will be there. Your friendly announcer here, Pedlin Ron, will be announcing all of those events. We're very excited about that. You can go check them out online. Great people, great event, good time. My name is Pedlin Ron, and you've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, the lovely Fran Storch.
Hi.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast, you'd like to comment, send me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to more and past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or you'd like to appear on the show as a guest, please send me an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedlin Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs.